B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. This is Felger and Maserati on a Friday, on an agenda-free Friday. We've got Maz and Murray coming to you from our TD Garden Studios at the Garden in advance of Bruins-Leafs Game 5. I come to you parts unknown, and this is how we're going to roll today, one of these split shows. Maz, Murray, how you doing? Can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, yeah, loud and clear.
Okay, unfortunately for you and the people of Boston, you can hear me. Agenda Free Friday is still the same deal, folks. You set the agenda with your calls. Anything we've gotten to this week or have yet to get to, it is totally up to you. We have Release the Hounds at 617-779-0985. We'll get to you as soon as you're loaded up. Also, I'll let you know that Agenda Free Fridays are driven by the Bernardi Auto Group, where car buying is always agenda free. Choose from new Acuras, Audis, Hondas, Toyotas, Volvos, and over 500 pre-owned vehicles. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life, BernardiAutoGroup.com, where they sell snappy, beautiful new Audis. Murray, Mass, who wants to go first?
Go ahead, Murray.
All right, so I declared the Red Sox season already over on yesterday's show, and I know that probably sounds premature to some people, but I now have numbers and facts to back up the burial.
Always a dangerous thing.
Numbers and facts. Who needs those?
I've dumbed it down so people don't get a popsicle headache, but it comes down to this. Since 2010, 150 teams have entered May with a winning percentage of 500 or below. Of those 150 teams, only six who were three or more games below 500 made the playoffs, and only two of them with single-digit wins did so, the 2010 Braves and the 2015 Rangers. Those are your comps for this year's Red Sox team sitting at 6-13. The Braves were 9-14, that Rangers team 7-14. If the Sox go 9-3 the rest of this month, they'll still be below 500, which will give them anywhere between a 4% and 13% chance of making the playoffs. Still following along?
Yep.
If they go 6-6, they'll be 12-17. Gives them a 4% chance of making the playoffs. If they go 9-3, they're 15-16, 13% chance of making the playoffs. These numbers not in their favor. Right now, starting with three tonight against the team that has the best rotation in baseball and the best record in baseball, do you expect them to go into Tampa and actually win this series, their first series of the year? Because I don't. So the bottom line is this. This team, or baseball in general, since 2010, if you're playing 500 or below on May 1st, your season's essentially over. They're done before Easter. I stand by it. Now you have the numbers to back that up. Done.
I mean, it really is. It's stunning, right? Like, you know, it just goes to show you that people who think that April doesn't matter are like, you know, to me, completely clueless. So, Mike, I'm going to jump right in, if that's all right with you.
You do it, man. You do it.
Yeah. I'm going to play off of Murray here, and this relates to Dustin Pedroia, who's since been placed on the disabled list here in the last day or so. But nonetheless, I started thinking about this more last night, and you know what? The Red Sox got to find a long-term answer here. And when I say long-term answer, I mean I think it's time to talk to Dustin Pedroia about we're putting you on the IL and you might never be coming off. Because look at what they had to do to accommodate this guy in the early part of the season. They kept him in Florida to start the year, and he wanted to be on the active roster, but they kept him down there. Then they got back, and they activated him. He played in six games. He never played second base on consecutive days. He DH'd two of those six, and in the other one, he had to leave after his first at-bat. Okay? So a team that is 6-13 does not have the roster flexibility or latitude to bring along a veteran guy back from a surgery that he might never recover from. They don't have that latitude. And so, look, we all love the guy, but the fact is it's either on the DL for a long period of time or they work out some type of deal, which is never going to happen because he's got a ton of guaranteed money. All I'm saying is this. They can't carry Dustin Pedroia. They can't carry him. If it's going to be one of these things where they have to DH him to get him in the lineup, well then, you know, again, on Patriots Day, he was a designated hitter.
It was stupid. He was a prop that day.
They lost 8-1, so I look at it and say, well, he's in the lineup instead of who? Mitch Moreland or Steve Pearce or J.D. Martinez or any one of the outfielders? And at this stage, incredibly, I would have rather have Jackie Bradley in the lineup than Dustin Pedroia, because I just don't see it. I just don't see it with Pedroia. They got to get a long-term answer here, because they can't carry this guy on the roster. They can't do it.
Okay, we got Red Sox on the board at 617-779-0985. My take is going to be something we'll circle back to and give you more details on a little bit, but just this sportscasm we have at this time of year with the Bruins and the Celtics going back and forth and both having a chance in the NFL draft coming up and the Red Sox, you know, in their compelling spot, and it's just tremendous. And you have all these choices as a viewer, and we have another night coming up here tonight where it's Red Sox, Celtics, Bruins all going head-to-head-to-head like they all did the other night on Wednesday night. They all went off at the same time, and the ratings were interesting. I meant to get to this yesterday, and I just forgot. But the ratings, the Bruins won the rating battle the other night pretty soundly. And I'm just curious, and then it was the Celtics ahead of the Red Sox and Yankees. And I'm just curious, you know, what does that say? What does that say to you? Wait, and what does that mean? I don't know exactly what the hook is there, but we're going to use a jumping off point for something. Are the Bruins the most compelling story? Is that it? I mean, they're not the most popular. Who would say that? You know, they're not. But are they the most compelling story right now? Is it the most compelling product? We go back to that, the NHL playoffs, and just what that, I don't know, just the nature of the NHL playoffs. Is that the most compelling product? The Celtics played two close games. They played two close games, and they actually have, you know, I think they're considered farther along. They're more of a championship-caliber team, if you will, than the Bruins. And they're playing competitive first-round games, and the Bruins are beating them. So what does it say to you? I know you said something the other day, Matt, to me off the air about the Stanley Cup playoffs. You want to bring that up here?
I just think that the chase for the cup, the run for the cup, is unlike any other pursuit in sports. There's really nothing like it. For the level of sacrifice that it takes to get there and really to watch it, like, you just invest in it as a viewer, as a team, as a fan, any of that. You have to invest in it. It's a cup run, even if it doesn't end in a championship. Do you go into it and say, boy, we want the Celtics to make a run at the championship? But the run for the cup.
Oh, it's a grueling endeavor. It really is.
It's just,
as a viewer.
just the run is worth it, yeah. Almost. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you want the championship. But in basketball, it's sort of, I don't know. I just think the whole vibe is different. In hockey, it's different. That run for the championship in hockey is unlike anything else, really. To me, it is absolutely riveting and captivating.
Okay, so here's the deal. Bruins going into Game 5 tonight. Huge. Huge game for this Bruins team. Celtics, can they win on the road tonight in Indianapolis? Of course, that will be on the table. The Sox and their start. Just what a story that has become. That's on the table. Patriots heading into the draft. We'll be throwing markers. Next time you see us on Monday, we'll be chucking markers at a draft magazine. So, you know, that thing's coming up. We can't wait for that. And the Kraft video and the Kraft story that continues to percolate out there. Could it be possible we'll see that video at some point today? So we'll get to all those things, but as usual, go to your calls here in the opening segment, as we'd like to do, and we'll lead it off with George in New Hampshire. Lead us off here on Agenda Free Friday, George.
Michael, the NBA's, Tony, you stole some of my thunder there with your last comment. The NBA has become a predictable, corrupt joke show, okay? And I'm going to tell you why. You've got blatant in-season tampering, not by the management, but by players. And when was the last time a major upset in the playoffs occurred in the NBA, unlike the NHL, which is almost every year? Okay, it was like 2010 when Dallas upset Miami. And what does that bald-headed stooge, okay, Adam Silver do? That bald-headed stooge, Adam Silver, what does he do other than nothing? Thanks, Mike.
Okay, George, I don't know if there's anything you can do. That sport's always been that way. But that to me is the biggest difference. It really is. The first round of the NBA playoffs is just, it's obligatory. It's obligatory. And meaning it's just rote. You know who's going to win. You know when they're going to win. And if there's ever a little surprising sort of result, I mean, you want to say Brooklyn at Philadelphia in game one there, you know what happens in game two. And it's sort of like an automatic. And there's just something so predictable about home teams winning. You know, even so much as a game gets called a certain way one night, you know, like, let's say, LeBron only gets 4 free throw attempts in one playoff game. You know the next one, he's going to the line 17 times. Like, it's just, there's something that's so predictable about those NBA games. It gets better in the last two rounds, but I think the first two rounds of the NBA playoffs are pretty much, I'm sorry, they're pretty much useless.
Oh, yeah, you can set a watch to them. That's what, there is one that's actually going on right now that's kind of interesting, and that's the Spurs and the Nuggets.
So you agreed,
have, you have a 7, two games to one on a 2, so that's kind of interesting. But, I don't know, considering the pedigree of the Spurs and Pop being there, would it be that big of an upset if they ended up winning that series?
No, but that's about the only one, really. That's about the only one. The rest of them are formalities, if nothing else. And, look, Mike, if we're spinning off of those ratings that you were given there a second ago, I look at it and I say, I mean, there's a lot of variables. One of them to me is the Bruins were playing the most important game, right? They're deeper in their series. The Celtics are playing a dog crap opponent, whether the game's competitive or not. The Bruins are playing an opponent that's worthwhile, and they were further along in the series. And that's and again, to me, the quest for the cup, like just that road, that run, like you dig in and you know it could last 6 weeks, 2 months, whatever. The run to the cup, like to me, there's, you know, it's like a bigger version of the Kentucky Derby or something. That's how it feels to me.
Carson in East Lansing joins us on the Celtics. What do you got, Carson?
Hey, assuming we get past Indiana, what percentage chance would you give us to beat Milwaukee?
Percentage chance. All right. Well, I'll drop you in. I don't know, Maz. What do you give for a percentage chance right now for the Celtics and the Bucks?
Okay, so for the Bucks have home court. Okay, so by definition, that's what, like, you know, 54% or something like that at a minimum. You know, if you
across
every game
across the NBA, it's usually for series. I don't know.
No,
the first
higher. Right. I'm saying at a minimum. Like, let's say the teams are dead even. Okay. That if the Bucks win all of their home, 4 out of 7 is my point.
I see.
Like
if
you were to divide, it's 57% is what it is, right? So, and I think it's a little bit higher. So I would put the Celtics' chances at, I don't know, 35, 40%, somewhere in there. I think they have a legit shot. Like, I think their roster is good enough to beat the Bucks, but they're going to have to overcome some stuff now because they dug themselves into the, you know, into losing home court.
5% chance for me. They sucked on the road there last year. They obviously don't have home court. They don't have their best defender in Marcus Smart. Giannis is the MVP. 5% chance. And Bledsoe has actually looked pretty good so far. Granted, it's against the Pistons. Same with Middleton. They're better this year. And the Celtics sucked there in those road games last year. I think if it was flipped, they would have lost that series in the first round. So, yes, 5% chance.
Okay. I'm going to give the Celtics a 51% chance. I even though I don't think what you've seen so far in this Indy series is encouraging, but I just think they're a more complete team. I think they're a more playoff built team, if you will. And I've watched a fair amount of the Bucks, and if you get into close games down there, they really, Giannis is not a late game option. He's just not. And I just think that's going to come out. I think that's going to come out. But either way, I mean, the Bucks are going to win some home games. So there's no question about it. It's going to be a deep, good series. But I'd give the Celtics a slight edge. Anthony in Medford on the Bruins. Go ahead, Anthony.
My cameo. Of course, tonight's huge. If they lose tonight, they got to win 2 in a row. Nobody's won 2 in a row all series. But three guys real quick, I'm going to say, have to step up. Torrey Krug. I hope he's still not injured. He makes that dynamite first pass in the power play. He's going to step up. Tuukka Rask. For $7 million, Mike, I want a little more. And the last one, Johansson. Charlie Kuhl's been playing dynamite. I'll lead to some pickup. Now, with Corrali coming back, if Johansson and Kuhl, that third line can click, we get all three lines going, four lines going, we'll be all right tonight. Thanks.
Okay, babe. You know, what I find interesting about these guys returning, and the Bruins need them. They need Corrali, and they need Johansson. Heck, they needed John Moore the other night, who wasn't ready.
Right.
Can you imagine? You mentioned the nature of these games, Mass, and just how freaking 100 miles an hour these games are. There's no way when you come back off of injury in those first couple of games, you're anywhere near where you need to be. So it's like, Corrali, I think, is a huge difference maker on paper and should give them a big boost. He ain't going to be ready. I mean, how could he possibly be? He'll be out there, but he ain't going to be ready, Maz.
No, look, it's hard enough to do in the regular season. Like to miss length of time and then come in and jump right in midstream and hit the ground running. Now it's like, now you're jumping out on the Autobahn for crying out loud. You know, and just going to hit it in full stride. So if he can give him anything, it'd be a huge gain because to ask a guy to pop right in. Look, under the circumstances, I thought Johansson was okay in the first game back that he played. He drew that penalty early on that led to the McAvoy goal, I think it was.
Agenda Free Friday is off and running. Back to your phones after this.
Live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio, Bruins Game Day on 98.5 The Sports. Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Star Market Broadcast Studio. It's Felger and Mazz. Bruins Game Day. On your home of the Bees. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bergeron chipped it ahead, 2-on-1. Here's Marchand over the line, left side, looking for Pastrnak. Deflected, they score! Marchand's original pass kicked right back to him. He stayed with it, sent it down low, and Pastrnak redirects it home. Bruins 3, Leafs 2.
Just moving Pasta around, he wasn't on top of his game, and for whatever reason, Heinen has played, you know, with Berge and Marsh when Pasta missed 4 or 5 weeks. Did a good job up there, tailed off a little at the end. I'm not sure Dant can sustain it at this point in his career every night against the top lines, against the top D, but he certainly does a nice job in spots. Pasta and Hansen's back in. That gives us some balance in the third line, a threat to score with Charlie, but maybe a little more than what we had. So just moving some pieces around, hopefully it gives us a spark. Maybe it makes them think. You never know, it might affect how they do things. I don't think it did. They just, you know, they're going to play their game. But at the end of the day, we still got Pasta back with Berge a little bit. We knew we'd do that, certainly in the power play and a few 5-on-5 shifts, and it worked out today.
Hi everybody, Felger back here again from Parts Unknown. We got Mazz and Murray from our TD Garden studios at the Garden, where the Bruins take on the Leafs game 5 tonight. That was Cassidy yesterday. I'm sorry, 2 nights ago, after game 4, about all that line maneuverings that he did. Apparently, they're going to keep that up. They're going to do the same thing. They're going to have Pastrnak with Krejci. They're going to have Heinen with Bergeron, and that's how they're going to roll. But then again, Mazz, he sort of kept his hand close to his vest before the last game and then brung it on everybody right at game time, to the point where in the pregame warmups, he had Pastrnak back up with Bergeron and Heinen down, you know, on the third line and all that. And then basically out of nowhere when the game started, he had them all switched up. So I feel like Cassidy woke up in that last game, and hopefully that's what we're going to see here. I hope, as our friend Ted Sarandis would say, those lines are fluid and Cassidy continues to do his thing, because I think that's when he's at his best, is when he's mixing and matching and tossing guys around, Mazz.
Yeah, I like what he did. I like what he did in the last game. I mean, to me, there was an unpredictable element to it that you're sort of saying, okay, where are they going to put him now? You know, again, his first game, his first shift of the game was a double shift. There was another one there in the first period. So, like, at times he's leaving him out there and changing everybody else. I love all of that. Keep him guessing. That's the point. If the Leafs are going to put that much emphasis on Pastrnak, and specifically him as opposed to the first line, fine. Move him around. Like, keep him guessing. To me, I love the way he did it last game. I'd do it the same way.
Who's the most important guy tonight, in your opinion?
Tuukka. Is that a cop-out?
Yes.
Like, you know, you want me to pick someone other than Tuukka?
No, but tell me about Tuukka then. Tell me about Tuukka.
Okay. So, look, it's a big spot. The Leafs have dictated, again, the pace of the series. And I mean that, again, within the individual context of singular games. I feel like 3 of the 4 games really have been played at the pace more that Toronto wanted to play them. And then beyond that, they've dictated the pace of the entire series in that they've been in front. They've controlled it. They won game 1. You had to chase to win game 2. They won game 3. You had to chase to come back to a tie. So I'd like to see the Bruins take the upper hand in the series and put pressure on Toronto to respond in one of these even numbered games. And the one thing I worry about is that in this environment, big game, you know, you're getting closer to the end of the series. If Tuukka lets in a bad goal or too early, now here you go. So I worry about the goalie.
Okay. I mean, it's fair. If this series now is just coming down to the best players, you know, who gets the most from their best players? I mean, that's what it's been. That's what it's been. When Tavares and Marner and those guys are pluses, they win. When Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak are pluses, the Bruins win. So stack that up. If you were drafting this series, we do this in basketball all the time. If you were, Murray, I'm going to ask you, if we were drafting this series and you could draft the top 5 players, give me your draft in order.
Oh, geez. Would go
Bergeron 1, even though he hasn't really been all that good in this series. I would go Marchand 2. Then I would go Mitch Marner. Then I would go Austin Matthews. And fifth, I would go McAvoy.
Marchand over Marner?
Yes.
I mean, that one's close. God, it's so even, really, when you put it that way, Mike. It's so even.
I mean, a lot of these guys are just coin flips. They really are. And I'll tell you right now, most of my list where I put the Bruins, it's because of Bruins bias. You can make a case for some of these guys to go higher.
I mean, I look at it and I say, you know what? You know, the other one is, what about Tavares?
Tavares!
Like, he's in the... Yeah. So I look at it as the 1-2 to me would be Bergeron, Tavares in some order. Like, however you do it, it's those two. And then the next two are Marner and Marchand. Like, I think it's those four guys. It's really a dead heat. Like, who
would you rather have?
There?
Would you rather have Marner, Marchand, or Pastrnak?
Ooh.
Right?
Marchand.
Okay.
Yeah, it's tough. No, that's a hard one, though. I mean, like, and I say Marchand just because I think he is, you know, I mean, Marner's been really good. It's not Pastrnak only because the other two, to me, are more 200-foot players.
But this proves the point. An exceptionally close series in talent, in the whole thing. And so which one of that grouping, whoever you got, Tavares, Marner, Matthews, you name it, Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak, which group makes the most plays? I mean, that's what it's been in this series so far. And if that's the case, that's what it's going to come down to tonight and the rest of the way. Kyle in Maine has a Bruins talk. Go ahead, Kyle.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I understand all the uneasy feelings about the Bees to this point, but two reasons why I'm optimistic for tonight. To answer your point about Corrali, yeah, he's going to be rusty, but his game is straightaway speed, and he's a better centerman than Achari, so he's going to make that fourth line better. More importantly, what I feel like no one's talking about, the Leafs have minimized the loss of Kadri to this point because they had last change in Toronto. They are going to feel that much more when we've got last change tonight. They're going to feel the effects of missing him more so. That's why I'm pumped for the Beast tonight.
Okay, I hope you're right. The thing about Corrali, yes, on paper, absolutely. He changes. That fourth line has changed dramatically for the worse since he's been out. I mean, there's just no question about it. They're a non-factor. I mean, they have not been a factor. So he's got to make it better. I'm just telling you. Everyone's at playoff speed now. You watch these games. Everyone's going a zillion miles an hour. Everyone is all, you know, and he's going to get dropped into the middle of that. I don't see how he possibly has the same sort of jump or can keep up with these guys. Because everyone who's come back into the lineup late has looked like it. When Camford cycled in, it looked like he wasn't ready. Moore didn't look ready the other night. Johansson, you're right, Maz, held his own kind of. But, man, that's a tough ask for Sean Cry to come right back into the lineup. And then, you know, quote-unquote, be Sean Corrali. I don't know. I think that's asking too much. Let's go to Bob in Nantucket. He has a Patriots thought here on Agenda Free Friday. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I live here full-time on the island. I run into Coach Belichick on occasions. And he was kind enough to, you know, I know his game and, you know, I say hi and this and that. But I ran into him at a local coffee shop, and I got the opportunity to ask him, you know, what he's leading on taking in the first round. And he turned to me and he said, you know, that he gave me that look and he said, let me just tell you, kid, you're going to be shocked, not surprised. So I just wanted to throw that out there and see what you guys think, who they're going to take and why.
Love it. Hey, Bobby, keep these lines of communications open. 617-779-0985. As soon as he's on to you, you know, you're not going to get any more material. So I'd call us back under an alias the next time. He says, you're not going to be surprised, Maz. You're going to be shocked, he tells Bob in the coffee shop down in Nantucket at the Downey Flake. You tell me, Maz, what does that mean?
Yeah, I saw him and I asked him and I said I was getting a crawler. And I thought, and Bill says to me, you're going to be shocked.
Give me a shocking draft move, would you please?
Quarterback. Quarterback would be the shocking move. To me, that would be the one that would surprise me.
Or they trade 32 to Arizona and they get Josh Rosen.
Like, bingo.
That to me is shocking.
Thank you. Or I don't know when Bob ran into him. You know, 32 to Pittsburgh for Antonio. But, I mean, maybe I don't know if that was ever on the table, but a trade would be shocking. Would you be shocked by any move at 32? I mean, the only thing that would shock me is a big trade up the board for a quarterback. That would shock me.
Yeah, I mean, with the Patriots, you can never rule out anything, so I got you on that. I just look at it and I wonder, I mean, given what the quarterback class in this draft looks like and that Murray's going to be gone, I'd be surprised if they took a quarterback at 32. I would. But, you know, again, it wouldn't be the most outrageous thing in the world because I believe they need one. Hell, I'd have taken one higher than they took Etling a year ago.
Stay tuned for more Bruins Game Day from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
From the center of the hockey universe, it's Felger and Mads. This is Bruins Game Day, live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Oh, schedule day, oh, schedule day, where fans get to pick wins and losses.
It's finally here, bro, the bad schedule. You ready to go over it?
Yeah, kid, like last year we got the joy of six. Now Brady and Belichick are going to take us to seventh heaven.
Yeah, week one, Sunday night, they raise the banner, and then they take on the Steelers.
It ain't right that they're playing on Sunday night. It should have been Thursday night. Goodell is screwing us again. It's a conspiracy.
Yeah, it is. Goodell's such a loser. Trump should try to get him fired.
Win and
Goodell. Look at this right here. Look at this. Weeks 2, 3, 4. At Dolphins, home against the Jets, and then at Buffalo.
Yeah, three straight weeks, three straight losers.
Win, win, win. Week 5. Maybe this could be our road trip, bro. At the Washington Redskins.
Hey, I told you before, I don't like that. It's offensive to the people whose land we stole.
Are you going soft on me, bro?
Nah, just kidding. I didn't want to see it change, and I don't want to grow as a person either.
Win. Week 6. Thursday night, at home against the New York Giants.
I still can't believe those refs didn't blow the whistle in Super Bowl 42. Eli was sacked. He was in the grasp. They should have blew the whistle.
You know that's Goodell.
It's always Goodell.
Win. Week 7 at the Jets.
Win.
Week 8. This is where it starts to look a little tough, bro. Home against the Browns.
Yeah, these Browns are already getting overhyped. I hate them. I hate Baker Mayfield. What kind of name is Baker? Like, what's he bake bread in his spare time?
Yeah, I bet it's soft bread, too. He's like soft bread. Win!
Again, it's a wonderful time of year. Schedule's out. Draft is next week. Do the Patriots have a whopper up their sleeve? Wouldn't that be great if they did? If they had really something up their sleeve? If, you know, and I'll just feed the conspiracy theory, right? Because the Josh Rosen move would be a whopper, right? Don't you think that, here's my guess, is that the Cardinals already have something worked out and the league is asking them not to announce it and the team's not to announce it because they still want to have the show on Thursday night, right? It's a big, if you can save that reveal for your TV show, you know, that's the value right there. So you don't bury the lead and kill the best part of your TV show 2 weeks or 2 months before the draft. So would it surprise anyone if Arizona was just sitting on something? And would it surprise you if what they were sitting on was Bill?
No, it wouldn't surprise me in the least bit. No, absolutely not. And so, what would shock me is if they were to move up. When we were discussing this in the last segment, I told you a quarterback. Like, if they were to move up into, say, the middle of the first round or something and take a quarterback.
Oh, that would be mind-blowing. That would be incredible.
Amazing.
They never do that. Yeah.
It would be tremendous.
Yeah, that would be cool to me.
Did either of you see the wild hypothetical that Bill Barnwell of ESPN put out there a couple of days ago?
Go ahead.
It would be a three-way trade between the Patriots, the Cardinals, and the Giants. And so what would happen is the Giants end up getting Josh Rosen and one of the picks from the Patriots. And the Patriots ultimately end up with the tight end with the Giants, Evan Engram, and they get Robert Kimdiche from the Cardinals, the defensive end.
Okay. That would be interesting. They need a quarterback. I want them in on a quarterback. That's what I want from them. Let's go back to the phones here on Agenda Free Friday. Everything on the table, including Celtics. Here's Jordan in Florida on the Celtics. Go ahead, Jordan.
I feel as though Kyrie Irving has been doing most of the work on offense. Do you guys think Jason Tatum has the ability to elevate in the playoffs to help Kyrie close out some of these games?
Okay. Who's the second in order, second and third most important player on the team?
Tatum, Horford.
Yeah, Horford's sort of a given to me. Like,
where's Hayward?
I mean, oh, I forgot about Hayward. I'd put Hayward second. I'd put Hayward number two, and then after that, you want to tell me you think it's Tatum, Horford. I think you could argue even Jaylen Brown, for crying out loud, with Smart out of there. They're going to need him to give him some defense and be good at both ends. Hayward's number two. If Hayward plays like he did in those stretches there at the end of the regular season, I think everything changes for them, everything.
Okay, Celtics tonight on 105.7, our sister station, WROR. Also catch a game on NBC Sports Boston. Bruins on 98.5, the Sports Hub. They drop the puck shortly after 7. Let's grab, we've got Tom in Warwick. He's got a Bruins thought for us. Hi, Tommy.
Hey, guys. You guys mentioned the top five in the Bruins-Toronto series. Most of them were forwards. You guys have been talking about the Bruins and the Maple Leaf forwards and how they're pretty much even. Dead match, but the Bruins seem to have the better defense in my eyes. I'd like to hear your thoughts, maybe a top five on the defensive side. Muzzin was a huge pickup for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but other than that, I haven't really heard anything about the other defensemen. So
I'll tell you that I think that Toronto's defense is better than we gave them credit for, or they're playing better. And Muzzin, to me, has been the biggest surprise in the series. How he's been deployed and how he actually got to David Pastrnak and how he's actually was able to match up against that Bergeron line. I mean, we all said going into the series, Maple Leafs had no answer for Bergeron, no answer for the Bergeron line, no answer for the line, no answer for it. And here comes Jake Muzzin, and he answers for it. So that, I mean, I think, not that Muzzin's the best defenseman. I mean, that still should be McAvoy or Morgan Rielly or guy, you know, someone like that. But I think Muzzin and Zaitsev have been the most surprising, for sure, and impactful defensemen in the series, Mass.
Yeah, so look, they've been up until the last game, they were really good, right? Oddly enough, and I was just checking the plus-minus numbers on the defensemen in the series. Zaitsev and Muzzin now are respectively a -4 and a -5.
Is that right?
A lot of that damage, though, was done in the last game. So, you know, I still think... You know, like, Haynes, he's a +4.
Well, that's what I wanted to know, because he's the guy every time. How many plays does he break up? He's always getting his stick in there. He's just he's been a pain in the ass in this series.
So, I think the Bruins have a better D-core, but the gap isn't as big as I thought it was going in. And I told you, going into the series, I did a hit up in Toronto where they said draft the defenseman in the series. I took McAvoy first. They took Rielly, as you were saying. They're probably the top two guys. But you compare the talent, and all the talent, you know, the real talent in this series is all at the forward position, most of it.
Johnny in Warwick, Rhode Island on the Celts. Hi, Johnny.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my show, my call. Great show going on. Hey, I think getting into July 1st, we should go after KD and Kyrie, reach out to the Lakers, tell them to take the 3 draft choice, and they have to take either Hayward or Horford. What do you guys think about that?
And then get LeBron. Is that what you're talking about? Is Kevin Durant a realistic? He loves Kyrie. He wants to play with Kyrie. Is he a realistic possibility here?
I mean, I never say 0% on anything.
I do. Zero.
So, like, I would tell you it's like half of 1%, for crying out loud. Because you just never know what is going to happen. But in order for the Celtics to do that, Durant would have to opt in, be a sign and trade. Like, it just... It's way too convoluted. It's not impossible, but it's convoluted.
Little birdie, Jimmy Stewart, maybe you could weigh in on this.
I
do. Do you think LeBron James is anywhere, like even a remote plan B, plan C, plan D? Do you think he's anywhere on the radar for the Celtics?
I think at one point there was an option there, and maybe there still is, but I'm not as confident. I don't feel as good about him being, say, a plan C for the Celtics as I was a week ago.
Okay, so you think a week ago there were little rumblings there that was on their radar?
Yes, I do.
That's insane.
Oh,
it is. There's another little kind of rumble from the Lakers that they may have offered a big name who's under contract somewhere else, say Miami, a president of basketball operations job.
Oh, that's the Riley rumor that's getting out there now, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. LeBron would run sideways if Riley showed up, wouldn't he?
You mean run away from him?
It's more of a LeBron has approved it, and it's a matter of if Pat Riley is going to leave Miami for the Lakers. At least that's what underground rumblings are telling me.
Well, a little reunion, you know, a little reunion there between the two of them? Like, that's interesting.
Okay. Someone actually legitimate running the Lakers. That would, you know, add that city to someone actually who has a clue, unlike Irvin there. That would change the dynamic out there for sure. When we come back, what are you watching, Boston? When you get these three games back-to-back-to-back, and they're all off against each other, it's happened on Wednesday, it'll happen again tonight. What are you choosing, and why, and what does that say? We'll get to that right after these words.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Broadcasting live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio, it's Felger and Mads, Bruins Game Day, on your home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Matthews will trigger, it was 12.1 to go, and Indiana down three, inbound, thrown away, Wes Matthews threw it across court towards Bogdanovich, who wasn't even looking, had no idea the ball had come in bounds, and it sailed from the left side of the floor, harmlessly over the head of Bogdanovich, and on to the Boston bench.
Wow.
And the Celtics, who last year stole a game at the Fieldhouse because the Pacers couldn't inbound the ball from the left side, are about to do it again.
Well, it was really a play for Bogdanovich to come across, or maybe like a little, I guess, on the screen play on the opposite side. But he never looked up as the basketball was coming towards him, and all of a sudden it was out of bounds before you know it.
Still a play that just blows me away. And that first camera angle from behind Matthews, chucking it clear across the court, right into the hands of Marcus Morris. Yeah, comical.
Yeah, it was like he was like trying to give someone a souvenir.
It was, wow. So this is what the Celtics are up against, and they had to struggle in both those games to beat that team. So I don't know how you should feel about the Celtics. But the point here is, when that happened, a lot of you had just flipped over. Because until that point, more of you were watching the Bruins. And I meant to do this yesterday, but I just want to go over the ratings information from Wednesday night, when the Bruins, Celtics, and Red Sox all played at the same time. The Bruins won the rating battle. And all these games, it was interesting, all three of these games had split broadcasts. So these games were spread across six different networks. The Bruins were on the NBC Sports Network and NESN. Celtics were on NBC Sports Boston and TNT. The Red Sox were on ESPN and NESN Plus. So you had six different options to catch these three different games. So the numbers I'm giving you are added up. So the Bruins number is NBC Sports Network, the national feed, and NESN together. The Bruins did an 847. The Celtics did a 578. And the Red Sox did a 441. The Red Sox were in New York. That's the game lost on the Grand Slam in the seventh inning. So they were leading up until the seventh inning. Maz Murray, your thoughts on why the Bruins win that battle?
I think it really comes down to the likability factor of the teams and the realistic chances of them actually winning a championship. And just more than anything else, I think the most compelling product is the NHL playoffs.
So, look, to me, there are multiple factors, but I can tell you that the way I did it was the most important game was the Bruins. So, you know, I tried to watch all three, but the Bruins was the most important game. It was the most entertaining game, the most competitive game, all of that. So, to me, it was an easy choice. And then the second one, again, I went most important game, so I did the Celtics second and the Red Sox third. That's how I did it. The quality of the product is also a factor. Those hockey games you cannot take your eyes off of. Can't do it. They're too good.
And it's the nature of the sport, true. You can't take your eyes off a playoff hockey game that you're invested in. Or a basketball game, you can. You can come in the last 5 minutes if you want. And that's the old cliche about basketball. And often it's true. It was true about that Celtics game. It didn't start until the final 5 minutes when the Celtics got their head out of their ass and took over the game. And baseball, you can totally take or leave. So I think a big thing is that the Bruins were leading early. That was a game the Bruins went up 2-0. If they're down 2-0, You know, I saw the numbers from game one. The game one numbers here in Boston were not good because midway through the second period, you watched it and you said, what the hell is this? You know, they were down and they weren't playing well and it looked like a nothing night and people tuned away. So I think it was important that the Bruins went up early. And there is just the product. I mean, you know me, I'm a hockey guy. I'm going to tell you that hockey is the best product. It is. There's no question. It's the best product. And to me, what makes it the best, there's a lot of things that makes it the best, but one of them on top of a lot of other things is that you don't know who's going to win. You don't know who's going to win. And that's kind of important in these basketball games, especially in the early rounds. It is, even though the Celtics were trailing most of that game, and even though you thought it might have been in doubt, you said it, Murray. You said it yesterday. That game was never in doubt. You knew that Indiana was going to crap themselves, which they eventually did. We just showed you the play.
Oh, yeah, no, both of them. You could see it coming. There was no reason to sweat in either of those first two games of this series so far. Going into this night, though, that you're going over the numbers from, we collectively thought the Red Sox were going to be in second place because remember Allen in Florida called in to be like, it's got to be the Red Sox. Don't think it's going to be the Celtics. And I agreed, considering where the Red Sox have been. It's their first meeting with the Yankees. That, to me, was the big surprise.
So what do we attribute that to?
That the Red Sox weren't that they were behind the Celtics that night. I really was surprised by that.
Yeah, no, but I mean, why do we think Red Sox Yankees didn't rate like it normally would? I'll tell you what. I mean, a big thing is Nesson Plus. You know, I still can't. 894. What is it? What's the number?
I don't even know what it is. I scrolled till I find it.
Exactly.
I had a hard time finding it too. And honestly, I was streaming the Red Sox. I had a hard time streaming it. It was a complete pain in the ass.
And I'll be honest, I'm an old, and I've just barely figured out now how to do the voice remote thing. You know, Nesson Plus. So you know, it goes
oh,
there.
We need to video that.
But oh my god! But I got to bring Emma. Come in here, Emma. I need to do it. Emma, come in here. You know, I bring in my kid. Show me how to use this thing. Find the game for me. So there's part of that. There's a lot, you know, especially in the baseball audience. There's a lot of olds. You know, there's a lot of olds out there saying, "What? How do I find? Where is this game?" Yeah. And that's, you know, that's partly me. What I also found interesting, and this happens from time to time, when there's these split games, when the national feed outrates the local feed. And to me, the big one. So it happened in two of these three games. In the Red Sox game, ESPN did a 2.22. Nesson Plus did a 2.19. Okay. A lot of it is that for Cocked and Nesson Plus. No one knows where it is. But still, it's still. People were willing to watch that on ESPN over the hometown broadcasters. In basketball, it was close, but the locals did beat TNT. NBC Sports Boston beat TNT 3-3 to 2-4. But in hockey, NBC Sports Network did better than Nesson. NBC Sports Network did a 4-3, and Nesson did a 4-1. Again, it was close, but... And this is doubly surprising to me because a lot of us didn't even realize that these were going to be split games. In the past, they were Nesson exclusives. And this is the first year now that they're opening up some of these first-round playoff games to the Nationals to split. So this wasn't even – I don't even think it was really advertised. In game one, all of a sudden, it was a split game. It was like, oh, these games are split now? And now you get to game four, and Milbury, and I can't remember who the play-by-play guy is, on NBC Sports Network is beating Nesson. What does that tell you, Murray?
I mean, without maybe sounding like too much of an inside dork, I think it maybe comes down to the production values. Like, I love watching those games, even if it's two teams I don't really give a rat's ass about. If it's on that NBC Sports Network, I like, you know, their music that they play with any of the NHL games. I like their broadcasters a little bit better. Nesson, a little bit, looks and sounds a little low rent. It does.
So, I admit, I do it sometimes based on who's calling the game. Like, if I have a choice, it's not the only reason I ever watch a game, but if I can pick between the two, I oftentimes will go to the national point of view because I know what the local point of view is, and I know what the local broadcasters are going to say, so I want something different, and I'll take the national guys, and Murray makes a good point about the production value. NBC... Boy, did they do a good job on the hockey.
Oh, it's awesome.
They really do. I like their in-between periods show. Their replays are terrific. Really excellent across the board. But the big thing for me, at least with the hockey, and I would say that foremost, is that I think the national hockey guys offer me a perspective that I wouldn't otherwise get.
Yeah, I always go national. Always. And it really comes down to one thing. I don't want to hear you people bitching about the refs. I don't. I can't. Tommy, I love to death as a person, as a human being, but I just, every trip down the floor, you know, please, I can't. And Jack's getting kind of bad like that, too. And it's I don't want to hear you crying about the refs. I don't. I think our broadcasters are good. I think they're insightful. But I think they take that cheese, and I can't do it. I can't listen to you whine about the refs. I just can't.
So, Mike, the only thing that I would add is, like, it can depend on who the crew is. And when I say that, for example, and I'm adding the Red Sox into this discussion just because it happened the other night. But if I'm getting Eck and Remy as opposed to whoever the national baseball analyst is, I'll take Eck and Remy. I'd rather hear those guys.
Okay, so we're back at it again tonight, all three head-to-head-to-head. If, the Bruins will get a jump. And I'll tell you what, if the Bruins are leading, they'll win the night easy, right? If the Bruins are up, you know, whatever. If they're up by the time the Celtics start, the Bruins are going to carry that rating through and they'll win easy. If the Bruins are getting smoked 4-1, they won't, because people will turn it off. I mean, it's as good as the hockey is and all the things we've been saying. You ain't going to watch a useless night when you know you're going down. So we'll see what those numbers are. Back to your phones on everything, I promise, on Agenda Free Friday after Murray's 90-second update. There are no commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.